Welcome to the Six Figure Developer Podcast, the podcast where we talk about new and exciting technologies, professional development, clean code, career advancement, and more. I'm John Calloway.
I'm Clayton Hunt.
And I am John Ash.
With us today is David Neal. David is a family man, geek, musician, illustrator, speaker, software developer, and Microsoft MVP. He runs on a high-octane mixture of caffeine and JavaScript and is entirely made of bacon. Welcome, David.
Thank you for having me.
So, David, before we get started with the sort of main portion, would you just, you know, introduce yourself, maybe tell us a little bit how you got started in the industry?
Sure. Well, how far back do you want me to go?
As far as you'd like.
Well, it all started when I was 8 years old, and I got a TRS-80 given to me from my uncle, aunt and uncle, and it made such an impact on me. I started learning BASIC around that time, and, you know, it kind of propelled me forward, and I later got a Commodore 64 and started playing around with BASIC on it, and I got my first PC sometime in college, and at first, I didn't know that I wanted to be a developer. I kind of was good at math and loved playing on computers. It wasn't until I took an accounting class. And I was learning Lotus 1-2-3, and I was teaching a lot of people in the class, including the teacher, how to use it. And I thought, well, you know, this computer stuff comes pretty easy. Maybe I should, you know, check out a class on computers. So I took a Turbo Basic or Turbo Pascal course. And yeah, with the first week into it, I was like, yes, this is what I want to do. I started my career in Turbo Pascal.
What version of Turbo Pascal was that? Do you know? Do you remember?
I know, let's see, Turbo Vision 2.0, I believe, is what I used. I think Pascal was 4.0, but I might be thinking of, I think that's what it was. And then later, Borland, I upgraded to Borland Pascal, and then came Basic and back to Basic and then Visual Basic. Sometime around the late 90s, I switched to Classic ASP and became a web developer, and I've been doing web apps ever since. I was at the Microsoft PDC in 2000 when they announced .NET. They gave everybody at the conference a little book called Presenting C#. And being the nerd that I am, I went back to my hotel that night and I read it cover to cover. It wasn't a very big book, but it was everything that I was looking for. At the time, I was thinking about jumping ship to Java. And when I read all the info on C#, I was like, yes, this is it. Of course, I had to wait another year before .NET was released, but I was chomping at the bit. And as soon as I could get my hands on it, I started using it and was a .NET developer from that point forward.
Now, today, I understand you're mostly dealing with JavaScript, as that's pretty much the language of the web these days. Is that?
LOL, JavaScript. So even though I was a .NET developer for all those years, I was still a web developer. So ASP.NET, and I was doing a whole lot of JavaScript on the front end. And when jQuery came out, it was, you know, a real... that was a game changer, right? I mean, it made doing web apps on the doing front end stuff on the in applications so much easier. And I have continued this love hate relationship with JavaScript over the years. And as the language became better with ES5, ES6, I didn't hate it so much. And, of course, I saw Node when it came out that it was, you know, this opportunity to use JavaScript on the front end and the back end as well. And it had my curiosity. But for a long time, I didn't use it because I'm also a SQL Server nerd and been using SQL Server since, well, Sybase 4.2 on running on Novell NetWare. Was my first introduction. And so since I couldn't use SQL Server with Node, I was like, well, what can I do with this app? You know, I can't do anything with this. You know, I've got it. Whatever I build has got to be on top of SQL Server. So around 5 years ago, the modules available for talking to SQL Server from Node became mature enough that I could start building some applications, and I got hooked, and I've been pretty much full-time Node.js ever since.
So have you abandoned .NET at this point, or is it just your first tool that you reach for is JavaScript front-end and back-end at this point?
Yeah, the first tool I'd reach for is JavaScript. And I can do, you know, CLI apps. I can create desktop apps with Electron. I can build, you know, web servers, of course, using JavaScript on the front end. So .NET at this point is kind of like, I'll use it when I need to maintain some old projects or something, but it's not my go-to language anymore.
So recently I was at CodeMash, and you were also at CodeMash, and you spoke about sort of the process of you kind of transitioning into a leadership role, a leadership position, and sort of, I forget exactly what the title of your talk was, but it was talking about the reluctance that you had,
yeah,
for kind of embracing that title. Could you talk a little bit about that and sort of your experiences there and some words of wisdom?
Yeah. So in that talk, it's a leadership guide for the reluctant leader. And I talk about some of my journey in different leadership roles. Early in my career, you know, this has probably happened to a lot of other people too. I know this story resonates with a lot of people, is that, hey, I'm a software developer. I'm, you know, good at solving problems, and, you know, people like me. And thought, well, Dave is doing such a great job with these projects. Why don't we just make him the manager for the team or something like that? And so, you know, it's like, I did so great, I got promoted. I'm like, all right. Well, I'm an introvert and by nature. And, you know, giving me these responsibilities of, you know, checking the health of the team and going and asking for project status from people and talking to people about, you know, whatever issues that they're having, both, you know, professionally and personally, and, you know, just all these other things besides just writing code. Like, I didn't want to have anything to do with that. You know, I saw it as a career limiting move. I thought, you know, I just want to write code. And I was not happy with it. And I, you know, found every opportunity that I could to write code. I did the bare minimum to get by. And then eventually I left that position and took a new job just doing straight programming. The problem is that cycle repeated itself several times in my career. I get promoted to a management position or something like that. And I was like, I don't want to have anything to do with management. And I'd leave that job, and my wife would ask me, what do you have against making more money?
Around the time when Steve Jobs passed away, there were a lot of stories about his leadership ideas and how to deal with teams, both good and bad. But one of the stories that I really appreciated and I thought really resonated with me, and one that I hoped more individuals and more leaders would follow, was that Apple was successful because they rewarded people in the positions in which they exceeded, in which they excelled. So, you know, if you're a phenomenal developer, we're going to reward you and give you benefits and do whatever we can to make sure you continue to be successful in that role. Mm-hmm. If it's beneficial to all concerned for you to move into management, then that's certainly an option. But if you don't want that, you wouldn't necessarily have to take that role just to rank up or get a salary bump.
Yeah. And it wasn't until many years later that I began to realize the necessity for taking on some of those responsibilities. If I wanted to ensure the success of a project or a team, I should be taking more ownership and doing things that helped everybody around me. I had an opportunity some 7-8 years ago to join a startup as the director of development for that company. And I thought, well, here we go again. Is this something I really want to do or not? And at that time, I was thinking, you know, I should really just accept the fact that I'm getting more mature and that I ought to take more responsibility and ensure the success of my team. And so I embraced it. For the first time in my career, it's like, well, if I'm going to do this, I want to do a good job at it. And I want to start learning how to be an effective, you know, manager, or being effective at that position. And that really helped. I kind of figured out, well, it's just another skill. It's like any other skill. If you put enough effort and passion into it, you can geek out about being a manager or, you know, different types of roles, not just about software, but you can geek out about other things about that particular type of position. I wasn't in that position for very long, and I went back to doing straight programming again. Not because it was a bad job or anything, but just the circumstances that I was in. And a few years ago, the company I was working for sent about a dozen of us to some leadership training at a company called the Scarlet Leadership Institute in Nashville, Tennessee. And it was an eye-opening experience. It blew me away that there are skills that you can learn that can make you a lot more effective in whatever role that you're in. Things like conflict negotiation, conflict resolution, listening skills, speaking, presentations, understanding behaviors, understanding personalities, all these different kinds of assessments that were part of this program made me realize, hey, these are valuable skills to have, no matter if you're in a, quote, leadership position or not, whether you're in a management position or not. And what I came away with was, hey, I feel much more equipped now to be able to lead a team. At the same time, I know how I can apply these skills in the role that I'm in today. Even though I'm not in management, I can be a leader, you know, with among the people that I'm working with. And another thing that happened around this time was my manager came to me and said, we were doing like a one-on-one or something like that. And he says, thank you for being a leader. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I only report to you. There's nobody reporting to me. You know, I'm not managing anybody. And he says, you are a leader in the company. The things that you're doing, the reputation that you have, the work that you're doing in the community, you have a lot of influence on people in the company and around you. The things that you say, the things that you know, suggestions that you bring up, you have an impact. That makes you a leader. And that was another one of those kind of aha moments that regardless of the title that you have, regardless of, you know, where you are on the org chart, you can have impact and influence on people around you. And that's the whole premise of that talk, you know, to make full circle, is that leadership is not equal to management. Leadership is a set of skills and behaviors that you can have in whatever role that you're in, and you can have positive impact and influence on your team and the rest of the organization that you work.
Yeah, I recently finished reading Quiet, The Power of Introverts in a World That Can't Stop Talking. Historically, I've been an introvert myself. Every time I take any personality test, like a Myers-Briggs, I'll come out with 100% on the introvert side. So I myself have been
in a situation a number of times where I've been looked to as a leader or been in a position of leadership. So it certainly is a skill to master or to work on, especially being an introvert in a world that more or less rewards extroverts or looks up to the extroverts that you know, seek the limelight and seek those types of acknowledgments and recognition. Is there anything that stood out from any of the trainings or anything in your journey on being and becoming a leader?
Yeah, as far as the training itself goes, one of the things that kind of just blew me away was I've always had a real hard time dealing with conflict. You know, that's just always been a struggle for me. I don't know if it's maybe my background or, you know, the way I was raised or whatever. It's just, I want to avoid conflict at all costs. And that was part of the reason why I didn't want to be in management is I didn't want to have to deal with those kinds of hard conversations and hard problems that come along. You know, I just sweep them under the rug and hope for the better. In this training, they talked about a technique of how you can imagine a triangle, and you've got you and the other person that you're having this conflict with, and instead of the two of you, you know, butting heads or, you know, attacking each other, let's look at the problem as a triangle. We're on one corner, you know, on each of the corners, and the problem's at another corner. So instead of facing each other, let's both face the problem and turn our attention towards that. It's not personal. This is something that we've got to work on and resolve together. And that particular framing of conflict resolution was like, wow, that's it. I feel so much more confident now that I can approach a particular situation with that thing, that kind of metaphor in mind. Is like, this is not, I'm not at odds with this person, you know, or this person with me. We need to continue to redirect our focus towards the problem itself as this external thing.
Yeah, that's really good. I'm not so much you know, opposed to conflict or looking to avoid conflict at all costs. I've got a really quick temper, and so I'm just as quick to flip the table and burn the place down if you disagree with me. So you know, I'm always looking for tips and tricks on how to manage that myself and how to, I guess, refocus on the problem and not the person where the conflict exists.
Do you have any incidents that you might even be able to share where you've surprisingly used some of those leadership skills or the conflict management?
No, I can't think of any off the top of my head right now. It's been recent enough that I haven't had to employ some of those new skills.
Yeah, and you're such a nice guy, and you're made of bacon, so I don't understand how anyone could be mad at you.
I'm pretty sure everybody loves David.
Now you thought I had seen somewhere that you were speaking of or talking about TypeScript recently. I know that TypeScript is either loved or hated, depending on your specific background or various different ideals. What is your opinion? What is your take on TypeScript? You mentioned that you're mostly JavaScript these days, maybe reluctantly to begin with, but certainly all in now. What is your opinion on TypeScript personally and for others in the community?
I've had this kind of outlook on things for a long time where it's, you know, I may have strong opinions, but they're weakly held. I have opinions about things, but I don't mind people sharing their ideas with me, and I'm not too hard to persuade as to recognize the value in other things, right? So I guess to back up some, I used to work for this company that was really, really heavy JavaScript, a lot of front-end work mostly, and there were some people that worked at this company who have really, really strong opinions about JavaScript and different frameworks and so forth. And it was while I was working at this company that I ended up kind of dabbling with CoffeeScript for a while. And I knew better than to let anybody know that I was using CoffeeScript. But I created this project, and I was pretty proud of what I'd done. And I was like, yeah, I've been playing with CoffeeScript. What do you think about it? And the guy that I was talking to, he was really gracious, but he said, well, what does that do for you that you can't do with ECMAScript 6? I'm like, oh, well, yeah, not anything. And he says, and what is the CoffeeScript? What comes out the other side? And he's like, well, it's JavaScript. And he says, is that JavaScript really pretty? Is it usable? Is it, you know, you're going to have to debug that. Is it, you know, what kind of, how does that look? And it's like, well, it looks pretty bad. It's not the best, you know, JavaScript that could be generated, right? It's really hard to debug because of, you know, all these things that it does. He says, well, if it's JavaScript, just get really good at JavaScript. You know, use the things that are in the language and just be really good at it. You know, and he also talked about, you know, reminded me of all the tools that we use, you know, like, you know, linting and, you know, tests and all the things that's part of the standard ecosystem. And so from that point forward, I've been like, yeah, just use the language like it's supposed to be, you know, as God intended it. And so when TypeScript came along, I kind of looked at that and said, no, that's not for me. I'm going to stick to ES 2015, ES 2016, whatever. Like, this has got everything I need, and it doesn't do anything more for me than what I can accomplish with good linting rules and tests and, you know, all the other things, which you got to do if you're using TypeScript anyway. You know, it doesn't absolve you from doing all the kind of best practices around a JavaScript project. So fast forward now to present day, and I cannot ignore the fact that so many projects are now are switching to TypeScript, and that I have so many colleagues in the industry that I admire and respect their opinions who have essentially jumped on the TypeScript bandwagon. Like, well, if these guys are doing it, maybe I should take another look. And so that's what I've been doing, is I've been slowly dipping my toes into the TypeScript world. And my opinion at this point is I'm still on the fence. I can recognize that there's value for TypeScript on large teams, larger projects. TypeScript, you know, for the work that I do, which is mostly prototyping and creating small applications and creating smaller reference applications, TypeScript may not really give me that much, you know, benefit for what I have. But I can recognize that it can, you know, based on what smart people are telling me, it can, you know, increase the productivity of a team. It can reduce the number of bugs that make it into production. So I want to believe, but I'm just not there yet. I'm still scarred by CoffeeScript, I guess you might say, and thinking, well, my perspective is a lot of these, you know, some of these really smart people who are using TypeScript, they are also influencers on the TC39 on the committee, right? So that are influencing the next versions of JavaScript. And my prediction is, the things that are best about TypeScript are probably going to make it back into the JavaScript, into the ECMAScript standard. And that someday we're all just going to be happy JavaScripters again.
So I've been wading hip deep through the TypeScript waters for the last couple of years now. And I'm on the side of the fence where I just want to go back to JavaScript. The major benefit from TypeScript, from what I've, you know, from what everybody says, basically is the types. Bad code can be written in any language. And typed bad code is a lot more difficult to ignore than dynamic bad code.
I like that perspective.
Our code base at work actually has a whole bunch of where we are casting something to any, so that we can then cast it back to the thing that we wanted it to be in the first place so that we can mimic some hard locked typed class from Angular that we otherwise can't mock out for testing purposes. It is awful.
So you're proving that you can write bad code in any language at this point.
Yeah, I mean, we have to bypass Angular.
That's one of the reasons why I've been hesitant to jump into TypeScript is the testing. Testing is what sold me on building apps with Node.js. You know, coming from the world of .NET where everything's strongly typed, where every time I tried to do the right thing and do TDD or, you know, some type of test first driven development, it would get to that point where there was just so much friction in maintaining the test base, the test code, that it was like, I just got to get this done. This is killing me. I'm going to disable all these tests that are broken right now, and I'll get back to them someday, and that someday never come, right? So that cycle repeated itself lots of times. And when I got to Node and doing things just in JavaScript using something like Mocha, now it's Jest is really awesome. The creating tests and maintaining those tests in JavaScript, because it's a dynamic language, is so much easier. There's so much less friction involved because you're not having to mock out all these types. You're not having to, you know, go through these huge exercises to fake out a type system in order to, you know, insert your mocked objects or whatever. It's just, you know, it's easy. It's like, this is the way testing ought to be. And that's one of my hesitations about TypeScript is that's taking away some of that freedom and joy of the language, and it's going to result in fewer tests or not as good test coverage or something like that. That's kind of like what I see down the road. To what you said, recently I had a poll on Twitter about, you know, what do you like about TypeScript and things like that. And one of the comments I got confirmed, yes, TypeScript is great, except for tests. And for tests, we use pure JavaScript.
Yeah, and the tests are better than the types anyways, because they not only test the types, but they also test the behavior. So,
well, Eric Elliott, who is a really respected in the JavaScript community, he's written books and so forth. He recently wrote an opinion about TypeScript. It's on Medium. And I thought it was a really, you know, pragmatic view of, you know, after doing a whole bunch of projects in TypeScript, the conclusion that he came to was TypeScript, there are some benefits to it, but the benefits compared to everything else that can happen in a JavaScript application is like you're only looking at a fraction. It's only helping you with a small fraction of the types of bugs and problems that you're going to have in a JavaScript application. And so it may not be worth it.
Very cool. Well, one of the things we ask everyone that comes on is for them to sort of think back when they were getting started in the industry and, you know, think about where, you know, people might be today. And you've come a long way and you have a lot of advice and you've learned a lot of things, and just wondered if there was, you know, one thing that you could maybe could have told yourself, or you could, you know, give to someone who's there today, what would you tell them?
The thing that has made the biggest impact on my career has been getting involved in the community. And it's easier to, you know, so much easier today than ever has been. But there was a point in my career where I was working from home, which was a real privilege, especially, you know, 10, 12 years ago. And I realized, like, you know, I'm sitting here at my desk every day. I don't get out of the house. And, you know, outside of talking to a couple of guys that I work with, I don't talk to anybody. I don't interact with anybody. And I went to a conference, which is something I hadn't done in a long time. And everywhere I turned, I was hearing, hey, get involved in your community, go to a local meetup or a local user group. and like, well, I'm going to try that. I'm going to get my big rear end out of the house and go meet some people or go, you know, whatever. The courage to, you know, it took up some courage to do that. But once I got involved, I started going to some local user groups, that was like the catalyst for a cascade of events that has launched me, in my career and all kinds of things. Just for an example, out of the group that I was involved with, we did a hackathon for charities, and I, you know, helped build some cool stuff over a weekend. And, you know, the it's kind of like Extreme Makeover, you know, where there's all this crying and stuff at the end of the show. That was this meet, you know, this hackathon. There were people from this this hackathon that were just in tears over the things that had been solved or automated for them over a weekend. And it was some people that I met at that particular event that I ended up getting a job somewhere else. I mean, it led to an opportunity that I would have never gotten through, you know, a recruiter or just through my own network. You know, the opportunities of networking with people and getting to know people made such a huge impact on my career. And then, of course, somebody talked me into getting up and giving a talk at a user group, and it was terrible. I was, you know, convinced that I was the worst speaker in speaker history. And yet I had people come up to me afterwards and say, thank you to my face, you know, that telling, you know, who told me I did a good job, even though I knew without a doubt that it was awful. But it kind of planted a seed. It's like, that wasn't so bad. I should try that again. And I had some mentors in my life that said, hey, you need to keep doing that. You need to, submit to a conference. I'm like, what are you talking about? That's crazy. But I did it. And, you know, now years later, I'm doing this kind of stuff all the time, and I'm meeting, you know, new people, and, you know, more and more opportunities and all kinds of stuff have come out of that. A few years ago, I had the privilege of giving a keynote at Music City Code, which, you know, I'll plug that. That's an incredible conference. If you're looking for a good conference to go to, man, come to Nashville and eat you some Nashville hot chicken and go to Music City Tech, which is the name of it now. But I gave a keynote there, and I told this story about how I got started. And I had a few people come up to me after my keynote, and they said, you know, I remember when you gave your talk. I was there when you gave your first talk at the .NET user group. And you're right, you were terrible.
Well, that's a pretty good segue. Do you have any other speaking engagements? I know you just were in London and you're at CodeMash prior to that, but do you have any other ones that are coming up?
Yeah, I've got a pretty full schedule so far. I'm going to be in Porto, Portugal, speaking at NDC Porto. Let's see, Confu in Montreal, CodeStock, which is another one of my favorites. That's in Knoxville, Tennessee. It's a great conference. I think the early bird tickets are on right now for only $160. Fantastic 2-day conference. I'm really excited about that one in particular because they also do a track for like high school students.
Oh, wow.
And they have this, it's kind of under the radar right now, but there's a growing number of people that come each year to the student stuff. And so they're teaching kids about introductions to coding, and they've asked me to present for that. And I'm really excited about the opportunity to speak to some young kids about the career in coding and so forth. I don't remember how many other talks I'm giving. It's a lot. It's
awesome.
It's on my website. If you go to reverentgeek.com, I've got a link on there for speaking, and it shows my calendar.
Very cool. And if people want to just follow you, where can they obviously your website, but what about like Twitter?
Yep. So I'm Reverent Geek on all the things. So Reverent Geek on Twitter, on GitHub, Instagram. You know, I've gone from this hermit that worked at home who never saw anyone to now I'm a social butterfly, or at least I pretend to be. I try to be humorous on Twitter, and I succeed, you know, maybe two or three times a year.
All right, David. Well, thanks so much. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
That was David Neal. David is a family man, geek, musician, illustrator, speaker, software developer, and Microsoft MVP living in North Georgia. He's currently a senior developer advocate at Okta. He runs on high-octane mixture of caffeine and JavaScript and is entirely made of bacon.
If you like this episode, please like, rate, and review on iTunes.
Find show notes, blog posts, and more at sixfiguredev.com.
And be sure to follow us on Twitter at sixfiguredev.
This has been another episode of the Six Figure Developer Podcast, helping others reach their potential. I am John Calloway.
I'm Clayton Hunt.
And I'm John Ash.